couple of weeks ago, Main Menu spoke with Ron Shamahorn, the editor of the Odyssey magazine, and his predecessor, Michael Fayer. We now hear part two of that discussion, and Mike Fayer picks up the story where, not long after its launch, Odyssey just seemed to go from strength to strength.
More people contributed. More of them decided to come on board and help. Eventually, I had a staff that joined me, and for a while, we had about four or five people on staff that would write about different kinds of games, and that worked really well until eventually, because no one else was contributing, it really all fell to our shoulders, the staff and my shoulders, and there was a bit of burnout that happened, and most of the staff kind of drifted off after a while. But it was quite exciting while it was happening.
So the magazine evolved. People got to know about it, and I'm not aware of anything similar. I mean, really, what you'd done was to create something fairly unique from fairly humble beginnings. And that was 96, you say, when Odyssey first started, and here we are 8 years later. And I've certainly been aware of Odyssey for quite some time. Not sure how many of our listeners are aware of it. I would imagine that many of them are. And you got to a point where you felt a change of editorship was required. What brought you to that, Mike? You mentioned burnout, and that's a very easy thing to happen, really, when you focus on a project so much that you kind of neglect yourself, and ultimately that can become a problem. Was that part of the reason why you decided that it was time to sort of hang up your pen, so to speak?
Well, I felt that I had said most of what I wanted to say about games. Somewhere in the 40 issues that I've done, you'll basically find pretty much me as a gamer, me as a person. And I was getting lower and lower on ideas and energy for it, and it was getting harder and harder to have people contribute. We had more and more readers that would eagerly, they'd complain if you were a day late in publishing it. You'd get, where's Odyssey? What's going on? It's not gone, is it? And all this stuff. But try to get them to write an article and contribute, even a review or anything like that. And it's really like pulling teeth. You get the few real hardcore people that have kept Odyssey going over the years, and hopefully still will. It looks really good. Ron's done a couple issues now, and both of them have been great. In fact, he's had material left over to use, so that's a real positive development. I very rarely had that luxury. I usually had to use every scrap of even the hard stuff, where it was almost as much work editing it as it would have been to just write something from scratch. It was, some people really gave me an editor's workout with their writing and everything. But I would rather have done that workout because I had the time. I was single back then, of course, and I didn't know sort of how much life would change. And university, you can sort of, it's different than high school. University, you can control time a little more. It's not, some stuff isn't coming at you every day as much. You can sort of procrastinate a little. Not that that's a good thing. I don't want to encourage anyone to do that, because I gotten heaps of hot water for doing that. But as long as you were willing to pay the piper later and really work your little behind off, you could sort of manipulate time to do things like that, to stay up all night to write down this article for a magazine that and feel good about it, because it was the one thing you were giving out to the world. It was my, at least for me, it was the avenue that I could contribute back to people, to society as a whole, and to the growing number of game developers who were putting these games together. And so I basically got to the stage now where things have really changed. It's getting harder and harder to write. I can't pull rabbits out of my hats anymore. I can't spend all the time working on Odyssey that I'd like to, that I think you have to really keep it going, especially in dry spells where you don't get the contributions from other people. And those I can't really cope with much anymore, because I'm married now. We have all that marriage life to go through, and plus I'd felt I'd mastered it, and I wanted something new. And as it happened, we have two game engines now. I couldn't really see myself programming a game, because I'm not a programmer. I'm an artist. I don't know much about programming and don't really have the mind for it. It's sort of explaining to a computer logically what I will write down in terms of a game design. But now, of course, we have the GMA game engine, which I'm going to use for my first game. And we have the Robinson Brian is doing another engine that is for audio adventures. I have plans for both those engines eventually, starting out with GMA's and eventually going to Mr. Brian's engine. And I see a lot of potential there. You don't have to be a programmer now to make games. You have to have a lot of patience, and you have to, I'm certainly expecting a lot of nail-biting frustration as I try to tell a computer what I want it to do. So I can't do that and keep Odyssey going at the same time. If I'm going to take a shot at trying to design accessible games, I can't keep doing Odyssey at the same time. So I really had to let it go eventually. And thankfully, Ron stepped forward and offered to be the editor, and thus it was that the torch passed to him.
Well, let's talk to you, Ron. Welcome to the program. Ron Shamahorn, is it? I hope I'm getting that right. I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong. When did you first hear about Odyssey and Michael Thayer and what he was doing, and what was the appeal for you?
Well, yeah, glad I could be here, and that was a pretty good pronunciation of the last name. Over the years, it's gotten some very interesting ones, I can tell you. Well, as far as my interest in gaming, I was a little bit of a, I guess, late bloomer for computers. My first one didn't come my way until early 1997. And, you know, initially I just, you know, obviously didn't, you know, like Mike said with Odyssey and that, at the time there wasn't a lot out there and I didn't really know of any. So I just, you know, I was using it for, you know, your standard stuff, browsing the web a little bit, email, that sort of, you know, the mundane things. And then at a mutual friend's New Year's Eve party, 97-98, well, I happened to be a guest, and Mike was also a guest. And, you know, we were sitting there mingling, and we just started talking about games and stuff. And he was telling me, you know, that there's a fair bit out there with the text adventures and a lot, you know, like there's that whole enjoyment aspect of the computer for entertainment, which up until that point, I really hadn't known much about. I was pretty ignorant of that fact. And, you know, we hit it off really well that night. That's when I got my first, I believe it was 4 or 5 issues from our host that night, who copied them onto a 3.5 floppy for me. So I had some good reading material at least. And Mike and I got in touch. I don't know, I guess maybe a few weeks after that, and decided to get together for a day, and he would invoke me into the world of gaming, and that's how Mike and I met, and I've been, an active community member since then, through the email lists and the discussion, and trying out the various games that are out there.
An active community member and an avid reader of Odyssey magazine, I would imagine. And when did Mike come to you with the first idea? I mean, did you always have your eye on Mike's job, or did Mike kind of call you up one day and propose that you take this on? How did that all happen?
Well, I've always done my best to promote gaming and to let visually impaired or blind people know that, hey, there's a lot of neat stuff out there, and it's quite neat on the email list. We do, you know, once in a while there'll be a post from somebody who says, oh, I just found out about this, I just joined, I don't know anything yet. So good to see that the word is spreading, and I certainly believe that the magazine does help in that a lot. You know, there's over the 42 issues now that we've done. You know, there's some great information out there, like a whole ton of entertainment and fun things for people to do. And the way getting the, as far as me becoming editor came about, is, if I remember correctly, Mike announced on the list that he did want to sort of resign the position and, you know, said for people to respond if they were interested. And as I say, I've always, I think it would have been a It would be a shame to see it go down, you know, like to have nobody step up to the plate. And I thought, well, you know, being, I don't want to say one of the older members of the group exactly, but being around for such a long time and following accessible game development closely, I thought, well, you know, I know Mike very well. We've been actually very good friends for, well, since that New Year's Eve party. And I thought, well, I'll let him know I'm interested, and, you know, if he thinks I'm the man for the job, then he'll let me know. And subsequently, as it turned out, he thought that I could do a competent job, and, well, so far, so good.
So no arm twisting involved then. Fantastic. You volunteered, and, you know, 40 issues is quite something, and there must have been just a... I guess an ounce of trepidation on your part. Mike's act presumably being a tough one to follow, no?
To put that politely, yeah, my first issue, number 41, back in May when it came out, I was certainly nervous. You know, because as you say, Mike had done 40 issues, so it does certainly sort of sets a precedent to be followed, and I was nervous, and fortunately, you know, it didn't take a heck of a long time until people had read the issue and said, yeah, Ron, good job for your first one. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's great.
People naturally, I suppose, and this is something that I've had direct experience of, people naturally make comparisons. Have you had any of that?
I mean, I'm sure it's been, you know, been discussed. To some extent, I guess, among friends and that sort of stuff. However, directly, I haven't had anybody say to me like, "Oh yeah, you know, you've done a good job," or "Mike could have done better," or "I think you're better than Mike was." The closest I can think of on that is it was actually on a friend's live journal, and it was one of those little comments there, and. They were aware of the magazine, and I guess I don't think they were an avid gamer as such, but they said, yeah, I've read a few issues that Mike did. He did a great job, and he said, you know, tell Ron I wish him the best, and I'm sure he'll do fine. So that's the closest thing to any kind of comparison that I've heard. I'm not sure if Mike's had any feedback in that regard or not.
So people have been largely supportive. Well, that's good to hear. The business of editing that something like Odyssey, and feel free, both... Ron and Mike to come in here. Typically, what's involved there? Obviously, you receive contributions from people. I guess you monitor industry news. And what does a typical issue consist of, and how do you go about putting it together?
Well, I guess I'll start that to answer that one. It's really, it comes down to a number of things. It's not just about quality. I've always maintained, as an English major, you know, going through university, you learn how to write well, but you also learn how painful it can be when people make that the end-all and be-all. We've taken great books and completely turned them into torture devices because you had to analyze why this was written well, why this punctuation mark was used here instead of there, you know, all kinds of stuff that just takes all this wind out of your sails, and you're left thinking, why did I bother reading this book? I would have rather ate it. That whole attitude has stuck with me all through. The more I've learned, the more I see the danger of elitism and snobbery coming to the fore. So when I started Odyssey, I made it a point to say, look, you don't have to be an excellent writer. I will make sure you don't come off looking completely foolish. But, you know, don't worry about it. We're here to have fun. It's not supposed to be some, you know, elitist contest. It's supposed to be for everyone, for absolutely everyone, from the 12-year-old kid right up to the 90-year-old, you know? And we've seen all those ages in there. Like, we have had old people on the list, and we have had little kids, you know, coming on and asking questions, and that's exactly what I wanted. And really, with editing an issue, you get the articles in, you go through them, make sure that the information is accurate. You do your best to do that. Make sure you take the time to look for that, anything that would misrepresent game developers or different things, which has come up from time to time, and make sure that it isn't full of obvious, the obvious things, gratuitous swearing or things like of that nature. Of course, you check on and basically. For editing, that's what I did. I went through, and of course, spell checking it. That's a chore in and of itself. That can really eat up some time. But it's more the thing that can get you is it's more about community relations as well. You're not just an editor; you're a community member and a community leader to some extent. And you have to make sure that your wants are known in regarding the magazine, and try to make sure that people are aware. Okay, the deadline's coming up. So I should get my articles in or that we still need articles and throw out ideas for them because people seem to need that. They need the impetus, what do you think of this game? What do you think of violence in games? Like ideas like that, you have to sort of make sure there are some out there that people can snag onto and write about. And it's broader than that. You're not just editing a document. You're sort of involved in the community that makes that document. And it can be a tall order sometimes.
Yeah, and to follow up, actually, that what Mike covered is pretty much what I would have said, that there is a lot involved in it. It's not just, there's more to it than just, oh, it's an article, cut, paste. There's a lot involved in, as Mike said, making sure that it's understandable, that the grammar's half decent. I am not an English major, so there is probably going to be some difference in that level, but... also, that's not the point is to be an informative publication for people, to let them know about games, to discuss games, that sort of a thing. And the other thing I'd have to throw in here, and this is something I learned my first issue, is time management happens to be quite important. You can't just sit on the stuff and say, okay, I can do that tomorrow, no problem. I've now started a process, I guess, of, really taking not a complete final look at articles and reviews and so forth when they come in, but just a once-over to really clean up the bigger, any problems with it, the documentation, that sort of thing. So, and then I save it, and that way it's less work when it does come to putting things together. It certainly has... on the last issue there, it certainly did cut down on the amount of extra work I would have had to put in on it.
So the content of the magazine, that covers all aspects of not just blind gaming, but gaming in general. You mentioned ethical issues there about, Mike mentioned about the nature of violence in games and, to what extent, should that be permissible if at all, and Ron, I think, used the word documentation, so obviously there are articles describing to people how they would go about playing a given game. What's the bizarrest article that you've published? Is it a feature-based magazine? Does the editor write a column? Do you guys run contests? Feel free, either of you, to expand on the content of Odyssey.
Okay, well... presently, yeah. Any articles, well-written articles discussing the ethics of gaming, that's fine. That's totally permissible. And a great topic. there was actually a game out about, when was it now? Maybe a month and a half ago that was released. It was a text-to-speech engine, or a text-to-speech game, from Kitchens, Inc., and that actually promoted a great deal of discussion on the list due to the adult what was seen as adult content in the game, and I do think it was. I don't think it was overly bad, but there were, some heated discussions. Some people thought, well, it's horrible, and I didn't think so, anybody would produce something like that, which is kind of strange because where's the difference? Like, we're all people, right, whether we're blind or not. What works for one person, a type of a game, whether it be adult content or violent or even something as basic as a genre, that might be good for one person, where somebody else would say, well, no, I don't like that. I do write a little bit of a little bit of a column, and slowly have taken reworded segments you know, in like the template for Odyssey, just to give it my own flavor, which I feel is, well, not absolutely necessary, but if I'm the, you know, the present editor, then it, you know, just to reflect me a little bit more. There have been contests run for the good submissions as far as articles go, which is different from a review, obviously. I haven't, I myself haven't ran that, and I'm trying to recall when the last one of those was run. Yeah, that's about all I can think of. Maybe Mike can add to this somewhat.
Sure. Basically, well, from the outset, I wanted Odyssey to cover... I didn't want it to be just like a list of, okay, this game's out now, and this game's out now, and here's a review of this game. I always wanted more in it. I wanted to see people just think about the games they were playing beyond just the mechanics of playing that game. You know, I wanted them to thinking about the ethics. What are the games teaching us? What are they telling us? What do they mean? How do they reflect against our lives? What can we take from them? What can we learn from them? There's so many excellent questions, thought-provoking things out there. That came from reading other online magazines. There was one called Zizzy News, which is still out there. It's XYZZYNEWS. And the home site is just zizzynews.com. It's for interactive fiction. And there's heaps of really good ethical discussion, like all about identity and whether you're writing in the first or second person and what difference does that make and how do you project your identity onto the character in a game and all kinds of interesting things. I thought, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I want to see, that I think issues should contain. And I always tried to foster that, to get people to think beyond, you know, think beyond just the game, to the issues they bring up, to the surrounding context, to the community we're building, and the game developers and how it all interacts. There's so much scope there. And that, I've always tried to continue. Like Ron, I started right from the get-go having a From the Editor column where that was my spot to write what I currently was thinking about or events that were pertaining to Odyssey or pertaining to my life, which impacted on Odyssey. And I'm glad to see Ron continuing that. I think it is important for the editor to have a spot where he has his voice, where people will get a sense of where he's going, and also be able to then respond to that and help guide Odyssey and everything to where they want it to go. Because that's the most important thing. I didn't want a magazine that would just allow me to, you know, preach about what I thought about games. I wanted, sure, to do that, but also... More importantly for me, I wanted a spot where I could see what other people thought when they put their minds to it and saw, you know, the scope of what games would be all about. So that was sort of my take on what Odyssey should be. And I've always tried to, as an editor, try to make sure that each issue had some articles that brought you beyond just the reviews and announcements of new games. But the contest, yeah, we had, thanks to the generosity of a lot of the developers, and hopefully Ron will pick this up when he gets the chance and sort of start this ball rolling again, maybe even better than I did. I never really got organized with it to try and contact developers well before and really get to make sure that for each issue I had a free game that I was sort of okayed to award to someone that I felt deserved it. For a contribution of some kind. I hope that kicks off again. I wish it would have sparked more. At least it seemed to guarantee that you get a couple of good articles for most issues. It wasn't the complete solution that I was hoping it would be, but maybe there are more ideas that people come up with to motivate themselves and each other to help Odyssey keep a really good standard of reading quality.
Do you get much interest from game developers, and what kind of role do you think Odyssey plays or Odyssey should play in terms of the relationship between the games industry and the game-playing community?
Well, the game developers have saved it. I'll tell you right now, if they hadn't stepped forward and supported Odyssey, I don't think I would have had the wherewithal to keep it going for 8 years. They were the ones that really provided the reward in a lot of ways. I got free games to review and try out and have my opinion on. And they also came up with a lot of ideas, like the free game contest was originally a PCS idea. They were the first sponsors of that to try and really promote Odyssey and get people writing instead of just reading. And other developers have also stepped up to the plate and joined that. And Dave Greenwood, for a while, he was doing puzzles and games, and he put little puzzles, physics puzzles or different logic problems in there that people could solve. And hopefully I'd love to see that reappear as well. But all kinds of things like that we tried over the years to really keep Odyssey, you know, more than just, you know, a bulletin of news, really.
Let's talk about the economics of Odyssey. Obviously, it's something that one must spend quite a bit of time on to do it well. Is there a cost to subscribe? Does the magazine have any sponsorship as such, or is it just a goodwill project?
Solid goodwill. I started it voluntarily. I did that for 8 years, and I hope Ron will continue that for a good chunk of time, and that it'll always remain free for everyone to read and free for everyone to contribute to, including developers, because that's one area that Odyssey really can help with. It costs a lot of money to really advertise well in a lot of ways, so Odyssey is one forum where developers have free space just to plunk announcements down about their games, to get the word out, to get other materials, stuff out about them. That's always interested people to read about different developers and who they are as people. And hopefully that'll continue. I hope to see always new announcements of new games from them, because that's one of the things that I felt that I could offer back to them. It's just a vehicle for them to say what they wanted people to know and to have it get out there. And hopefully that's led to some good sales for them.
I would have to completely second that I do it as, you know, as an interested gamer. It's certainly a good way to give back information which people may not always have access to, you know, as far as what games are out there and who's developing what. I know Mike has actually put in for several issues now. I'm not sure exactly when it started originally. But while he's been doing the working on developing his game there, that there's been his developer's diary, which has always, I thought, proved to be a neat little read just to see the, you know, give people a really good insight as to what goes into producing a game. It's not just something that someone can sit at the keyboard for 10 minutes and just go, oh, done, there's a game. You know, it does take a lot of doing. And actually, I wouldn't mind if this ever became a paid position, I'd be happy, but I'm certainly not expecting that by any means. I do it because, I enjoy it, and it's good to give back.
Okay. So what distribution? I mean, the impression I get is that Odyssey is distributed using the internet electronically. You mentioned a mailing list earlier on. I review again. Feel free to answer this. Are there hard copies of Odyssey floating about, and who produces them if there are?
Actually, there. I know there are several websites which the magazine does list. In fact, there's a new one to be added to that list in the next upcoming issue. A friend of mine's got a website, and they've totally agreed to host the magazine, which is awesome. Any exposure is good exposure. As far as hard copy, I there's nothing I'm aware of, which isn't to say it hasn't been done, because it is totally free to you know, to exchange on a, you know, on a floppy disk, or put up on your website, or, you know, print it off and give it to people. I don't know if there's actual, as you say, hard copy of it out there.
I guess as it is free, people can always make their own hard copies if they want to. So it's just email distribution. It doesn't go out on floppy disk or anything like that.
Well, it used to. PCS, as Mike mentioned, has pretty much been on side with us for many, many years. And they used to send it out on floppy. However, now with much more people having cable or broadband connections of some sort, it's really become like a non-viable option for them to offer that, because they just didn't have anybody that was really all that interested in you know, in taking advantage of having it distributed in that fashion.
Okay, Mike, you've moved on to other projects. Obviously, you're still very much sort of on the scene, but you're not the editor anymore, and you've sort of described some of the reasons for that. Ron mentioned a few moments ago that you were developing a game. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Because of the two engines, I really began to think that I do have an opportunity now to put my money where my mouth is and try and develop a game that...
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. For those people who are not sort of technically minded, I mean, you say engine, I think, you know, what's under the hood of a car. What's an engine?
Oh, okay. An engine in gaming terms is basically what it is in car terms. It's the thing that allows someone to run a game off of. It's the basic code that enables you to do things that you don't want to take care of yourself. Like, I'm not a physicist, for example. I don't know a lot about geometry. I don't know a lot about trajectory, force of impact, area of effect of explosives, all kinds of things like that. Fortunately, Dave Greenwood does know a bit more about these things, or has researched and found out about them, and he's developed a game engine that he used to make Shades of Doom and GMA Tank Commander, and it's been used also to make Pac-Man, a talking version of Pac-Man, and, among other things. And that engine does a lot of the hard stuff for you. Like, I'll have to tell it how I want a monster, how many health points I want a monster to have, how fast I want it to move, its radius, its size, its speed, its accuracy with its weapon, the speed at which it can attack. And it's a lot easier for me to just say, create this monster with these attributes, than it is to try and program from scratch all the stuff that you'd need to create that same monster and with the same attributes. It's a lot of the work is done for you, and so I can then, it's one step removed from programming, I guess, is the best way to put it. I don't have to know the nuts and bolts and the syntax to sort of, I guess, explain everything to the computer. It has a lot of the basic work done, which you can then build on, and that's essentially what I'm going to be doing with my game Fearless Flynn. I was going to start with a very epic sweeping fantasy game that combined arcade action with a choose your own adventure style story with random outcomes and branches, and because replayability is a big thing with me. I don't want to give you a game that once you've won it once, it's junk, because there's no point in playing it again. I want every time I play it as a designer, I want to have fun with it. I don't want to work on something that everyone else is going to have fun with. I want to have fun with it as well. That means it has to be unpredictable. It has to be random to a degree. It has to, every time you play, it has to turn out differently. And that's, I decided ultimately to put Enchantments Twilight on the back burner. I still fully plan to do it. It'll probably be like my third or fourth game. I have a couple other ideas that I might do first. But for my first game, I'm going to do Fearless Flynn. It's just a hero's name I've had kicking around in my head for years. And I decided to do an arcade game with a sort of an adventure that really was inspired by a game for the sighted people called Gauntlet. And Gauntlet is an arcade game that you can play with up to four companions, live companions. We're talking real people. And they can come into each, get on the side of the machine. There are like four joysticks and four screens around it. And they can all play as different adventurers in a dungeon, going through and helping each other or hindering each other and gathering treasure and fighting monsters, grabbing food and spending tons of quarters at the same time. And it had a lot of neat elements. It had a voice that, you know, the dwarf needs food badly and all this stuff, and the player shot the food and all this kind of thing. And I thought, I'd like to bring that fun, cartoonish romp of an adventure kind of sense to the blind gamers, to give them an adventure that they're not the only person in it, that there are other people in it that they can interact with. And this is going to be single player, mind you. This isn't going to be a multiplayer thing. It's going to be a single-player game, but you'll have helpers, that like an archer or a healer or a knight or a prisoner that you have to protect and rescue. And basically, that's, in a nutshell, what it's going to be all about is gathering up treasures, building. You're going to have to complete a number of tasks. There'll be a bunch of side quests that you can do that will give you a higher score. It's all about gaining points. There's no grand plot to it, no sweeping story this time. It's just endless fun that'll just keep going on as long as you want it to. And there will be a way to win. I will put in, like, that, similar to NetHack and Rogue, there will be something that you can acquire that you can then go through, pass through another arena, you know, after you've retrieved it, and then it, you'll win. But otherwise, it's just going to be infinitely playable.
And I'm sure when it is playable and when it is ready, we'll see a review of it in Odyssey magazine. I guess that lies somewhere in the future. What else is in the future for Odyssey, Ron?
Well, as far as the future of the magazine goes, I do intend to sort of stay at the helm for quite a while. I've enjoyed it so far. It's been great fun to get the submissions from people, and certainly all submissions are welcome. One thing I'd like to try to do, and I think it's a very natural connection, and I'm not sure if it had been thought of or tried before, but is I know at a lot of the guide dog schools, you know, they have their little library collection. And in a lot of cases, too, access to a computer. And I'd like to try to facilitate, you know, having these, you know, at the various schools like in California or here in Oakville, et cetera, and just to say, you know, hey, this is it. You know, we're not asking for money or sponsorship or anything like that, but, you know, could you, you know, have this available to your clients, so, you know, maybe on their off time, this would open up an avenue to them. So I think it would be certainly some, potentially some great exposure. That's my initial plan. Otherwise, you know, I intend to keep it running as best I can.
Both of you are obviously big fans of games, but surely at the end of the day, sitting down at a computer and, you know, pushing buttons and having beep-beep noises come out. Well, why is that important? Is it important? Clearly, it's a way to unwind, but do games give us more than, you know, than just the sort of ability to switch off? Do they enrich our culture, do you think?
Absolutely. That's why I started Odyssey to begin with, because I felt tremendously enriched through my life, through my experience with games. I learned so many lessons through a lot of games, and so many skills, even like the use of computers. I didn't learn computers by taking a bunch of computer courses in school or by being trained. The training we get when we get our computers is really quite lacking. Often I keep running into people in Canada here who don't know that they can do anything other than read and write with their machines. That's the government's idea of personal use, and that's really sad, because there's so many other things you could be doing with that computer, including games. And because of games, interactive fiction, initially I learned to type 90 words a minute. Like, that didn't come from typing classes, that came from playing games. I learned how to go farther with my screen technology, with my speech synthesizer, how to make it work better for me, how to review things quicker. That also came from playing games. I wanted to hear what happened next in the story, so I worked at it, and I had incentive to learn to type faster. And that's just the basics. Now we've got games that'll teach not only hand-ear coordination and reflexes like they do with sighted people, but also just discriminative hearing, how to use your hearing better, and localize and aim and plan, you know, strategically, and all kinds of different lessons that the different games can teach us. Because really, when you get down to it, the games aren't just a bunch of beeps and blips. They're about life. In some way, most games are really it teaches about life, or have opportunities for us to learn about life if we choose. Even something like Pac-Man, where you're running around eating all the dots and avoiding ghosts. You know, Pac-Man can teach us a lot about greed, a lot about, you know, do I keep going after dots or do I run away from this ghost, or, you know, how much risk am I willing to take for the reward that is offered? All kinds of lessons and things can be drawn out of the games that we play. And let's not forget also that it's crucially, fun is a tremendously important thing. I've met so many people who have, you know, burned themselves out and don't read for pleasure anymore because they've had to read so much crap in school that they have absolutely hated, and they didn't have a choice but to read it, and it pushed them away from exploring what they might have really enjoyed reading and gotten a heck of a lot more out of reading for pleasure. And games are the same thing. We can get a lot more out of our computers if we don't view them as drudgery machines, as work tools specifically. If we can take a more broad view of them and say, yeah, computers, they can make me work, but I can also have fun with them. I can also learn on them. I can also do online shopping. I don't have to always ask people to drive me out to shop. I can go online and do that myself. And games can provide an excellent means of inspiring people to learn those skills without even feeling like they're learning. It's not a training session. You're learning because you're playing the game. And to play the game, you have to access form fields. You have to use combo boxes, radio buttons, or whatever, or type. You know, it's that kind of spin-off that, for a long time, I think educators and other people have really ignored in the blind community. And it's only slowly dawning on them that, hey, you know, there's some potential here. But I think there's a lot more work to be done in that, really to make that connection with parents, with people responsible for teaching blind people or helping blind people. They have to really see the benefits of these games. And then maybe we'll see the industry really expand, and we'll see, you know, economically it'll become more and more possible to earn an actual full living, you know, making games for the blind. But that's still a ways off. We've taken some tremendous steps, but They're the starting steps. We've got quite a journey ahead of us.
Ron, why do you think people should play games and read your magazine?
Well, obviously, the you know, being the focus is games in both the playing and also the various aspects and the things we can take from them. I hope it's going to be a good avenue for that, you know, for thought on it and for learning. I also, you know, and I guess Mike actually summed it up really well. I can't think of what else to follow up with. But there is a heck of a lot that people can learn from doing a game, even if they're having fun. That's probably one of the better ways to learn, is if it is enjoyable, then it's learning, but it doesn't feel like learning.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate both of you giving up your time, and I should say that this is the second time that we've recorded this interview. We recorded it earlier in the year, and unfortunately we lost it and weren't able to recover the file. So I appreciate you guys once again making yourselves available. And I think in many ways we've only really scratched the surface of some of these sort of larger questions. But I guess the story is, the news is that after 8 years, Mike Fair has decided that you need new challenges, and you've gone as far as you have with Odyssey, and it's now time for Odyssey to move on and for you to move on. Ron is now the new editor, and we wish you the very best of luck, Ron, and it's great to hear that people are supporting you. Where do people get Odyssey, and what resources exist for people to pursue some of the things we've talked about today, and where can people go to play some of the games that we've mentioned?
Okay, well, there are actually two Odyssey lists. One is and they're both run through Yahoo groups. One is a general discussion list, which, you know, has it can be rather high traffic at times. It would, you know, if somebody wanted to join, it would be blindgamers, all one word, no capitals, -subscribe at yahoogroup.com. And the other one, and the magazine, sorry, I should say, the magazine is published or is sent out through the Blind Gamers list, so no fears about missing an issue when it comes out. The other one, I believe, is AudiSub, which I believe is AUDY... SUB, I think. Mike might know that a little better than I do. And dash subscribe at Yahoo Groups if people just want the magazine and not all the, you know, all the other list traffic. There are several places on, you know, on the net to, you know, to get a hold of Odyssey. My, and since I can't remember exactly, like a website right off the top to go to, my best suggestion would be for someone to go to their search engine of choice and type in Odyssey Magazine and just, you know, and go with the results from there.
Right. So there isn't an official Odyssey website now?
Well, that's sort of up in the air at the moment. I think the domain name, we had one, but basically no one took advantage of a lot of what was offered there, and I can't really blame our host at all for retracting it after a while, because really it was very underused. We used to have odysseymagazine.org, but now that's gone away, I think. Maybe it might still be around, I'm not sure. Exactly where the state of that is. I guess that's up to Ron now to check on and nail down. But Darren Duff, he actually has a website, and I can't offhand remember the link, but if you can get to his site, he hosts all the issues. There is a Blind Help, www.blind-help.com. I'm not sure how up-to-date they were, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had all the issues up as well. Yeah, typing Odyssey, I should point out to everyone, is AudySSEY, and that's a fairly unique spelling. I thought it was being terribly clever putting AUD in front of Odyssey, because I think games are journeys and AUD for audio. Then I heard from a couple deafblind people saying, hey, we can't hear, but we like games, so, I mean, you can't please everyone, right? But that's where that came from, and so hopefully that'll help people keep track of it and pursue it. www.pcsgames.com. They have a list right from their site that has all the other games, accessible games. I can't remember exactly what the link is called, but it's right up near the top of their site. And it takes you to all the different game developers. Another good site to go to is www.audiogames.net. AudioGames.net, and they have a lot of reviews and different things, and I think they also had an Odyssey section. I'm not sure if they actually did that or not, but they're another great place to go to get information on that.
Is there anywhere people can go, Mike, to keep tabs on your project, the Fearless Flynn game?
Well, not just yet. They should just keep looking at Odyssey. I plan to post developer diaries every quarter to keep people up to date with what I'm doing and where I'm at and any snags I encounter. And that's my compromise for people who do, you know, want to know what's going on. But I don't want to start into the whole making a website and paying for domain space or anything like that, or starting an actual business until I get my first game ready. I really want to spend all the time doing that, and I might even have someone else sell the game, because I want to start on the next one. I don't see myself as a businessman, really, and that's the part of this that I'm, I guess, most in the long term cautious about is will I have the actual time to start a business? Will it be worth my while to? So that's something that the economics of it all are something I'm still really looking into carefully. But until the game is ready for release anyway, people should just keep looking at Odyssey, and I'll keep putting in developer diaries every quarter, and that'll let them know. And if they're curious, they can also email me. It's mfair, M as in Mike, F as in Frank, E-I-R, at Kogeco, that's C-O-G-E-C-O, .ca. And if they do that, and I have the time, I'll certainly respond.
Ron, Mike, thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it. For Main Menu, I'm Dave Williams.
Sincere thanks to our contributors on Main Menu this week. And don't forget, of course, it's your program. And if you'd like to submit an item for consideration, then drop us a line, mainmenu@acbradio.org. Until next time, I'm Dave Williams. Bye for now.